You're listening to episode 126 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Happy holidays, Max.
Yes, same to you, David. We have an exciting episode, I think, lined up here. We have a great guest to talk to tonight.
Yeah, it's nice. We have a guest. We're going to talk with Ariel. He had me when he introduced himself as Waze for Drones. Now, if he had to pick an app for me to absolutely fall in love with, is the traffic app Waze. It's my favorite item on the iPhone. And this week, with the Force Awakening awakens, I get to hear C-3PO telling me my directions.
Oh, great.
So that's awesome. So, Ariel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, guys. This is going to be fun.
Ariel Seidman is the CEO and co-founder of HiveMapper, which is, I guess we could call it a community-edited mapping and real-time navigation system for drone flyers. Ariel's been involved in some interesting jobs over the years. He was principal product manager at Sable, which is now Oracle. He was a director of product management at Yahoo and also the CEO and founder of GigWalk. So, Ariel, again, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Thanks, guys.
Before we talk about HiveMapper, we thought it might be good to just quickly go over the drone, we'll call it the drone registration requirements that came out from the FAA. Now, what this is technically is the interim final rule. It's 14 CFR Part 48.
Only the FAA could come up with an interim final.
I know, it's kind of an interesting description of it. Briefly, what we have here is that the FAA has a statutory requirement to register aircraft prior to them operating in the national airspace system. Now, the FAA also considers drones, if you will, to be aircraft, and so thus they're subject to registration. Now, there's an existing registration process for aircraft, but the FAA agrees that it's too onerous for small UAVs. Thus, we had the UAV Registration Task Force making a proposal to the FAA, and the FAA really accepted most of the task force's recommendations. And what we have here is an alternative to the existing registration process, an alternative web-based method. So, David, we want to run through this really quickly. It's kind of the things that we've been talking about. The rule applies to small UAVs, less than 55 pounds, but more than 250 grams, which is a little over half a pound.
And if you don't want to know what that is, go to your local supermarket and get two sticks of butter.
Is that 250 grams?
That's 250 grams or the approximate weight is, if you make your drone out of two sticks of butter, you have to register it. And believe it or not, my Nano almost qualified for it.
Really, does it? Well, there's some compliance dates that are required. If you purchased your small UAS before December 21st of this year, 2015, you have until February 19th in 2016 to register it. If it's purchased after December 21st, you have until the first flight outdoors to register. You have to register it before you fly it outdoors for the first time. Why December 21st? Well, that's the date that the website is, as we record this, is supposed to be live. To register, you have to be at least 13 years old. Information that you have to provide are the name of the aircraft, your drone, the physical and mailing address for you, your email, and you'll need a credit card to pay the $5 registration fee.
But the FAA is going to waive the fee for the first 30 days. So what will happen is, and unfortunately, this is going to be, they will charge your credit card and then immediately reverse the charge. After the first 30 days, the $5 fee, you will be charged and you will not get it reimbursed.
And what you get from this is a certificate of aircraft registration that includes the owner's name, the issue date, the registration number. It's a three-year registration, after which you would have to renew it again. And you have to display the registration number somewhere on your drone. It doesn't even necessarily have to be visible, as I understand it. So you can, you know, write it on the inside of the battery or something like that. I think that that is satisfactory.
There you go, Max. Tell everybody to write it on their battery. So if something happens, that's the first thing to blow up with the evidence.
So, Ariel, you must have been watching this process closely. What do you think about the registration requirements that the FAA has given us?
On a macro level, I think it's positive. We do need some regulation for drones. There's no doubt about that. I think on the downside, or the things that I would like to see them iterate on, and this is very kind of the non-government approach, right? Governments usually put these new regulations in place, and then they rarely kind of iterate on them. Mm. I think there's two changes that I would like to see them consider. One is this idea of registering a drone, a physical drone. I think it should really be about you registering yourself as a drone flyer, and then simply whatever drone you're flying at that very moment, you just pass your credentials over to the drone.
So and that's actually what's happening. You're registering any drones you own will have the same registration number.
So right, actually, you have to physically attach something to the drone. I think that's the piece. Because, I mean, you know, we all have drones. We sell them. We buy new ones. So the hassle involved in actually affixing something, you know, a sticker or whatever it is to the drone feels to me like a carryover from, you know, having a Cessna or a Boeing airplane. It doesn't really feel like the way the drones work.
And we should mention that these requirements now apply to non-commercial use. So this is recreational or hobby use. Commercial use of drones, the process is unchanged, which means it's still the Section 333 exemption process and all of that for now. So again, this just applies to a hobbyist, really.
Yep.
So why don't we move on and let's talk about HiveMapper. Ariel, tell us, what problem does HiveMapper attempt to solve?
So really it's solving the basic safety and exploration problem. So on the safety side, as we navigate our world around us, we have no understanding of how close we are to power lines, how many feet above the land we truly are, how close we are to a building structure. All of this information is simply unavailable to flyers today, which seems a little bit weird because when we use Google Maps or we use Waze, we have incredibly precise data, right? Like you're approaching a street corner, you need to make a right-hand turn. They say, hey, within 300 feet, make a right-hand turn. You know, within 20 feet, now make your right-hand turn. So there's a massive amounts of data that we have as drivers driving around our streets. But when we fly, we literally have very, very limited information about our surroundings. And so what we're doing is building and crowdsourcing this three-dimensional map of the Earth. So this is every building structure, the boundaries of it, the heights of it, as well as all the overhead power lines, any physical structure that could get in the way of your drone, we want to include that in HiveMapper and then make it available to you as you fly.
And Ariel, how did you come to want to solve this problem? I mean, is this because you saw it as useful to you yourself, or what were the motivations for you to get involved in doing this?
It was pretty clear. So I'm a drone flyer, and me and my son, we go out and fly drones all the time. And it was pretty clear that it was missing all of this information. So I didn't, you know, power lines are really hard to see on a drone. And so, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that I actually once hit a power line. And so it didn't end well for the drone. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. It was out in the middle of nowhere. And I just wondered, I said, well, you know, we know the height of that power line. We know where that power line is located. Why didn't I have that information beforehand? And I come from the world of Yahoo and, you know, data, Yahoo search, Yahoo maps. And I understood how powerful, if you could aggregate and amass this data and then give it to the drone flyers in very simple ways, I understood the power of that. And so that's when I kind of put two and two together and I said, there's a missing piece here that could be a huge opportunity. And then I had started another business called GigWalk, which was about crowdsourcing, and crowdsourcing in many cases data on a very, very broad scale. And I realized that by people flying their drones, they could actually help contribute to the map. So they could add new pieces into the three-dimensional map. So if, as you fly across the top of a building, we could actually add that building if we didn't have it. Or we could just verify the accuracy of it. So if HiveMapper thinks it's this, but it's actually a little bit lower than that, then we could adjust our data accordingly. And so that's the core of how HiveMapper works. And it's really relying upon we come to the table and we provide you a ridiculous amount of data to start with. And then as you fly with HiveMapper, it actually gets better over time in your area.
Yeah, that's kind of my first question when I encountered HiveMapper was, where does all this data come from? When you think about auto navigation, like with Waze or Google Maps or any of a number of others, there are existing databases of roads and things like that, traffic conditions, things like that. But when we're talking about flying a drone over potentially any kind of geography anywhere, how could you possibly amass enough information to make that useful? So you're approaching that by this by a crowdsourcing approach.
Yeah, so there's two parts of it. There's a part of it where HiveMapper and the team of engineers that we have here have actually worked incredibly, incredibly hard to extract this data from a variety of sources. So there's, like you said, there's not a database that you just go to and say, hey, I would like 30 million building heights, right, down to an accuracy of less than half a meter. That database doesn't exist. So we've actually done the hard work of extracting this information over the last 10 to 12 months. And so we now have 30 million building boundaries and approaching 20 million building heights. And it's, if you compare that to where we launched about 6.5 weeks ago, that was at 20 million building boundaries. So we've added about 10 million in the last 7 weeks, and that number will just increase as time goes on. So that's what we come to the table with, and that's U.S. focused right now. And as people fly, they'll have an opportunity to actually add additional data into the mix. And so if you could open up to HiveMapper and be like, oh, wow, this area over here already has a ton of data, but this one doesn't. But guess what? By flying, you can actually very, very quickly see that entire area mapped for yourself and for other people who are flying in that area.
So Ariel, describe how drone flyers contribute data. What does that process look like? Are they doing it on a tablet or a smartphone or something?
Yeah, so they download the HiveMapper app. So right now we're Android. We're working hard to launch an iOS version as well. You then connect it to your DJI drone, and we support a couple of different types of their drones. We support the Inspire 1, the Phantom 3 Pro, as well as the Phantom 2 Vision Plus. And so you go ahead and you connect the HiveMapper app to your drone. So we actually utilize DJI's software development kit, their SDK, to do all of this, to connect to the drone, to give you the video feed, to give you all the basic flight telemetry, to give you all the return to home features and all that kind of stuff. And then there's really just two ways that you can contribute while you're flying. You can just simply fly passively, it's contributing. And then the other piece of it is you can actually capture photos. And those photos help us understand the environment, and then we extract more data from those photos. So we call those, you go to a place, we have a bunch of places that you can actually interact with in the camera view. So it's like a heads-up display. You select it and you grab a couple of photos of that. The act of then contributing that photo to HiveMapper then helps us understand all of the critical information for that specific place.
And does that understanding occur in an automated fashion, or does someone have to, a human being, be involved in that to analyze and implement the data, add it to the collective database?
No, that's all happening in an automated way.
Yeah, so, good. I'm glad you said the answer, because if it was all manual, I think it would be a really kind of impossible task.
Yeah, no. So we utilize computer vision techniques, machine learning, to then take all that imagery analyze it, and generate the map for future flyers and for yourself, right? So you could say, hey, listen, HiveMapper doesn't have anything here. That's fine. I'm going to then come back. I'm going to go map this area, and then I'm going to come back in a couple hours, and it'll all be available for you. So that's the benefit that you get as a flyer, not only just to contribute to the map, which is a worthwhile endeavor in terms of the entire drone community, because we all need safer skies. We all need to map our skies together. But it's also an immediate value to you. So when you fly that area, you have all these additional obstructions mapped for you.
Do you think in the future you'll also include things like NOTAMs in that, so that maybe that if an area becomes a no-fly zone for whatever reason, that you'll be able to put that in real time?
Yeah, so we actually already have a mechanism. So if you go to the app right now, and we have a lot of the no-fly zones. So there's about 20,000 no-fly zones area, no-fly zones throughout the United States already mapped. So all of that data is provided for you so that you know as you fly, you know, when you're going to get into trouble and when you're okay. You can also contribute areas which may have been missed. So for example, a new airport goes up, or an airport gets closed down, or a military base gets closed down. So you can report all of those kinds of issues. Or you could simply say, listen, you know what? This is a private property. I've tried flying around here. The owner gently and nicely asked me not to fly around here. And I think it's just respectful that we, you know, not fly around this specific area. So there's a way for people to actively contribute and report issues about all of these no-fly zones, and do it in a really, really simple way. And what we're working with actually is fire departments. And so fire departments, helicopter units for hospitals, as well as the police who have low-flying helicopters, we want to give them a tool where we could say, or where they can say, hey, listen, you know, there's an incident over here, or there's a little fire over here, and there's helicopters operating in the area and responding. Please keep your drone away from them. And so that would give them a very, very simple way to instantly reach an audience of drone flyers so people know to keep away from these low-flying helicopters.
Fascinating. I just launched HiveMapper on my Android tablet. And, of course, the first thing it asked me is, where do you want to fly? So I put in a location, and I'm actually looking at Hartford, Connecticut, and I can see this probably is Google Earth or some view like that.
Yeah, so the absolute base layer is Google Maps or Google Satellite View. And then I don't know in Hartford, Connecticut, how much you can, if you zoom in pretty tight, you'll be able to see the buildings, the number of buildings that we have in that area. And then some of them may or may not have heights.
And in fact, a lot of them do. I see quite a number of little icons over many of the buildings here.
Yep. So there you go. So those, every single of those icons that looks like a little building,
yes,
those are map. That means that we've covered those buildings, and that when you fly around there, we know about those obstructions. So you can fly with a little bit more of safety caution.
And so let's say I was flying over the state capitol, and in fact, it is mapped. But if it wasn't indicated with a height, I could then add that to the database. I could report that height.
Yeah, you would just have to simply fly in that area, and then you wouldn't even have to manually add the height. It would just automatically, if we already had the building, it would verify the height. And if it didn't have the building at all, then we would actually go ahead and automatically add the height as well as the overall structure of that building.
Fascinating. I imagine the reception to this idea has been pretty positive.
Yeah, we've been thrilled. With the excitement around it. You know, now we have a lot of hard work getting all of the available drones out in the market, supported for it. And there is a ton more of data that we want to provide to people. So I think what users can expect to see is, you know, we had a guy reach out to us who's in the panhandle in Florida. And we'd love to have more data for him. And so how do we make sure that anybody who's flying in the United States has the entire area mapped for them, such that they can go out and fly with a confidence. And maybe there's just a couple of holes where they can actually then help us go and fill in those little holes that need to be filled in the map.
Fascinating. Now, we see in the press reports that it would appear that you're pretty well funded, but what's your overall business model? Where do you see HiveMapper going?
It's a good question. So I think there's a couple phases of HiveMapper. So one is build the data, and not just build unique data. I think that's the critical point, right? Anybody can grab no-fly zones from the government data sets, organize them in a nice fashion, and then provide them to an audience. But what's really hard is building up a 3D dimensional model of the entire United States and creating this data from a unique perspective, because nobody else has this, right? Like we were talking about before, like you can't just go to Google or you can't go to the government and say, give me, you know, 40, 50 million building structures down to the 1 meter level accuracy. And so that's the first piece of it, is work really, really hard and stay focused on building up this incredible data set, and then give the flyers the tools to help contribute to the map even further. So we're still in this first phase, mm-hmm. right? This, you know, build the data set and at the same time build the tools to enable anybody to become a contributor to it.
And you mentioned that, well, we know that this is available for Android right now, and you mentioned that this should be coming soon for iOS.
Yep. iOS is on the way. So we're working hard on getting iOS out. And we actually think, you know, the response has been really nice and really positive. The one question everybody asks us is like, when is iOS coming? So we hear people loud and clear on that in terms of getting the iOS out. So those are the phases of HiveMapper. And I think there's another aspect of it, which is how do you make the flying experience even more fun? I mean, people who have drones, a lot of the hobbyists, even the photographers, I mean, let's be honest, it's fun to fly. And how do we encourage even more fun? And so we don't have anything to announce on that, but that's definitely directionally where we're headed, is how do we make the flying experience even more fun?
Unless you're like a sick person like me who likes editing.
I
end up editing Wikipedia just because it's entertaining and I need to fix stuff. So that's the reason why I like Waze, is I can contribute to it. And there's a part of me that enjoys doing that. And I could see myself being, not that I can do much flying with me being a mile and a half away from an airport, an international airport, but I could see myself getting real joy out of updating the map and getting some satisfaction that way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've heard that you know, people want to be able to report issues. People want to be able to, you know, report questions. You know, if our building height may be a little bit off, they want to be able to update that. They want to, you know, retrace the boundaries of certain buildings. So they really want to get in there and get dirty and start to update this data. I think it speaks to everybody. Everyone has a little bit of an OCD side where you see something that's out of place and you're compelled to fix it. Right. And it speaks to that part of human nature.
All right. Folks who are interested in learning more can go to hivemapper.com. Any other places online that you'd suggest, Ariel?
I think that's a great place to start. You know, there was a blog. If you're just starting off and getting into HiveMapper, we put together a really good blog post called HiveMapper for Beginners. And it's a very thorough overview of HiveMapper and all the features and capabilities of it. So I would go to HiveMapper.com and then go ahead and read that blog post. I think it's sitting on Medium. So if you search on Medium for HiveMapper, it's probably one of the first results that will come up. And it's just a fantastic, you know, deep dive into HiveMapper and everything that it provides.
That's great. We'll try to put a link to that in the show notes. Well, David, it sounds really encouraging. You know, it's so exciting, you know, this whole industry that's growing and developing. And every week it seems like we see something new that's coming along, some new ideas, some new problem, or some problems that have been solved with new solutions. It's kind of what makes this stuff so interesting.
Yeah, and we like all of the periphery that relate to the drones. It's not just about the quadcopters. It's about all the other cool stuff that goes with it. And this is definitely one of those applications. Though I will sigh, being an Apple user, that I'm having to wait. But we'll forgive you on that one, because it's coming. So, and maybe you'll let us know when it does come out so that us Apple geeks can jump on the bandwagon also.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think you raise a good point there is, you know, the focus, I think, for the last 4 or 5 years has very much been on the hardware side. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. I mean, I think there was a lot of innovation that's taken place over the last 4 or 5 years on the hardware side, and there's still a ton more to come. But I think what you're starting to see now is people starting to innovate within the drone industry from different dimensions.
Yes.
So, you know, on the data side, on the computer vision side, which is effectively software. And so I think that's the exciting pieces. And DJI, I think, deserves a lot of credit for really opening up their SDK. And they really have, over the last 6 months, committed the right kind of resources from a technical perspective to ensure that their SDK is at the same level as an iOS SDK or an Android SDK. And that's really what it's going to take to see this next level of innovation blossom.
And that's really what it takes for you to extend this to other drone manufacturers, right? The availability of a good SDK that you can connect to. Because without that, you're kind of left out, aren't you?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I would put it this way, is if you're a drone manufacturer and you're not investing in SDK, you're probably going to be out of business, frankly.
Okay, the historian's going to ask,
what's that, David?
For all of us non-computer programmers.
Oh, what's an SDK?
Okay. Oh, what's an SDK? So SDK is a software development kit. It basically gives us the APIs or the hooks to access the underlying hardware. In this case, the camera, the ability to control the drone, the ability to actually pull the FPV, the video feed, to see the flight telemetry. So it's a series of APIs or hooks that gives us all that information, both read information as well as write information. So we can read all the information off the drone, and then we can also write to the drone and give it instructions as to what to do.
Right.
I love the fact that I can be an idiot on this show.
No, you can't be an expert in everything. Nobody can be an expert in everything, David. So, I mean, that's kind of why we do this as well, I think.
Yeah, because we want to learn. Yeah. And so I guess we should just quickly do a quick note of our video of the week.
Yes.
This is cool, folks. I'm sorry it's a military program, but it's still pretty cool. It's the Naviator, which stands for Naval Aviator. And it's an underwater drone that can fly and swim at the same time, or take off from water and swim, or swim and take off from water. It's pretty, pretty cool. This is really cool technology as far as hardware goes. So go to our show notes, which would be UAVDigest/126, and definitely check it out.
And it looks like it really works too. It doesn't look like a hack. You know, it flies real well, with quotes, it flies real well underwater, and it flies real well in the air as well. It's pretty dramatic. I guess this was developed by Rutgers University researchers. What, David? I think with some government funding.
I think DARPA had a hand in it, as well as the U.S. Navy. So
very good. All right, it's a great pick. Thanks for that, David. All right. Well, with that, I think this is going to draw our episode to a close. You've been listening to episode 126 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes, as David mentioned, you can go straight to those at theuavdigest.com/126. Again, we want to thank our guest, Ariel Seidman, for joining us on this episode. Ariel, thank you so much. It's been really fascinating, and we'll be following and, I think, using a Hive Mapper in the weeks and months to come.
Thanks, guys. Had a great time, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. And if you're like me and you want to dodge the previews of Star Wars or any of the reviews, you could surf the internet and at our various places like facebook.com/theUAVDigest. Follow us on Twitter. I noticed that our Twitter feed now is up to 5,200 people. So that's at UAV Digest. So thank you to all of our tweeters out there. If you'd like to send us feedback, you can send us feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com and send us links to your articles and show notes and your videos of the week. We always want to see them, and we want to hear from you. And especially now, we want to hear in the next couple of weeks about what you got for Christmas and did you register it?
All right.
And leave us some feedback on iTunes so other people can find us, or Stitcher.com. If you're looking for a late Christmas present for the holidays, well, you can buy some swag at our Cafe Press store, Or you can become a patron of the show, and we always appreciate our patrons, at patreon.com/theUAVDigest. So with that, we will see you next week. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.